Doctors in Victoria say urgent elective surgeries are being postponed as resources are being diverted to deal with COVID-19 patients. The number of people waiting for surgery has soared, and with many healthcare workers experiencing burnout, there are concerns about how long the crisis will run for. Professor David Storey is the Chair of Anaesthesia and Head of the Department of Critical Care at the University of Melbourne. Joins me now. Welcome.
Good morning. Oh, sorry. Good morning. Good afternoon, Patricia.
Welcome. What's the situation in hospitals at the moment? Do we know how many people in Victoria are currently waiting for an elective surgery?
Well, the current figures are roughly about 70,000 people awaiting surgery. That is for elective surgery. We need to be mindful that when we talk about surgical patients, that there is a reasonable number of people each day who require non-elective surgery, that is either urgent or emergency surgery. So, but for elective surgery, it's about 70,000 people.
What type of procedures are being postponed, and what are the potential consequences of delaying surgery?
So I think the important thing to remember is that the most urgent ones are what we call category one, which roughly means that people who are likely to deteriorate and may even possibly require emergency surgery within a month, they're the category one patients, and they're by and large getting their surgery. The people, as we move into less urgent, particularly non-cancer surgery, so people who, you know, I think that the person to think about most would be someone requiring a major joint replacement, say a hip or a knee replacement. And so patients who are having problems with mobility and or have quite severe pain. So they're people who, you know, are what I would call category two patients who really do need their surgery done because they are, their life is very difficult for them and they are deteriorating. So they're the ones who are really missing out at the moment.
Now, I understand that category one procedures are meant to be performed within 30 days. Are these really serious cases also being postponed?
I think it's important to remember that before COVID, that intermittently patients who required category one may have their surgery delayed. So that the example being, say, a patient who requires cardiac surgery may have a few days delay, and that is usually because of the non-availability of an intensive care bed. So as we talk about the COVID crisis, we need to be mindful that even before COVID, that intensive care units across Australia are often fairly full, and that surgery has been delayed. So now we are looking at potentially more cases of people with requiring category one type surgery being delayed. But, you know, clinicians and the government of everyone are dedicated trying very hard to avoid major delays for these patients, but it is possible.
How long is it going to take to catch up?
This is, you know, one of the known unknowns, unfortunately, because there are so many factors coming into this. One is how much will, or by how many patients will the inpatient numbers, both in hospital beds generally, remembering that surgical wards in some hospitals have been converted into wards to look after COVID patients and intensive care and high dependency beds. So how many of those are occupied and for how long? The average stay of a ventilated patient in intensive care is about 16 days. So that, you know, it isn't like people are going into hospital with COVID and coming out quickly by and large. So there is that component. And then the other important component in this is the staffing component. So that while the equipment is important, that the critical thing in critical care is in fact the staff. So medical, nursing, and allied health. And one of the issues is that, you know, frontline colleagues have been working for months now, often without much of a break. I mean, no Victorians really had a good holiday for a long time, and that includes the frontline staff. And so there is that component of people sort of wanting to have a break and also, you know, just exhausted. So that may slow things down, as well as people having to be diverted to other clinical roles, such as vaccination, such as screening. So there's limitations on staff. There are the numbers and our ability and when we can increase operating capacity. So we may look at extended longer lists, twilight lists, weekend lists to try and catch up. When we can do that within our system in Victoria is still unclear, but is almost certainly into next year.
So are there concerns that the situation will get worse before it gets better?
I think if we look at the projections, there is a good chance of that, that as we open up, and this is one of the important components, I mean, we would argue that, you know, when one considers now, given how many Victorians are vaccinated, that a more important figure rather than the total number of cases is really the number of people in hospital and the number of people in intensive care, and particularly those on ventilators. that's sort of that's what we need to look at. And there is concern that as we do open up, that the cost of doing that will be increasing the numbers. But again, because we'll be looking at hopefully a very highly vaccinated population, we might be luckier than we think we may currently be.
So medical staff, we know, have been working in really tough conditions for the past 18 months. You know, you've got this perfect storm, it seems to me, where you've been waiting and waiting for the pandemic. And now when you've got kind of so many high numbers, there's an opening up. But there must be so much fatigue. How are people managing?
It is tough. I mean, the good thing is that if we look overall in terms of the mortality of COVID, in the vaccinated population, it's dropped by about 90%. So in the early pandemic, particularly, so if we look at Italy or the UK, it's about 1 in 100 patients died. It's now about 1 in 1,000. Yes, that's vaccination, but it's also improved care and better understanding of the disease, which is helping those outcomes. So that has made it easier in a sense, in that if people do come into hospital with COVID, the chances are better. We're not sort of seeing the massive number of deaths. If we had the same number of patients as we did, you know, now that at the beginning of the pandemic, we'd see far more deaths. And that is particularly what takes a toll on clinical staff, is patients dying and patients being significantly disabled by the disease. And I think we need to remember that there are the people who overcome particularly severe COVID. One of the concerns we have for our system is what that means. So we now have had sort of tens of thousands of Australians who've had COVID. And what does long COVID and persisting problems mean for our healthcare system? And that's another one of the unknowns at the moment.
Is it unknown, or are we learning some things already?
Well, I agree that it is something we're definitely learning about. And we're looking particularly to other countries, notably, say, the UK, which is a comparable system, and how, you know, they now have long COVID clinics and understanding as those patients. So from our perspective as an ethos and critical care doctors, what does it mean when those patients who have had COVID come in for elective surgery? We anticipate that some of them will require higher levels of care post-operatively and will add to the demands. You know, previously they were fit and healthy people, they now have long COVID, and the risk for them as individuals has increased in terms of complications, and the intensity of the care we need to provide is also increased.
Just an observation you made, which I thought was really interesting. You said that, you know, obviously a lot of it is vaccination, but it's also that you're giving them better care. What's changed? What looks different in a hospital setting in terms of how you deal with a COVID patient?
I think, well, if we think back to the very beginning of the pandemic, you know, March, April last year, there was a lot of concern about using, you know, mask ventilation, the sort of, if you like, what we call non-invasive ventilation. So a bit like, for those who know what CPAP looks like, so a mask on a patient's face where a ventilator is assisting them breathing. There was a lot of concern about the spread of COVID itself. So, you know, to staff and other patients. So there's greater confidence in using these non-invasive. So invasive ventilation is where we stick an endotracheal tube into a patient. You know, we sedate them and we put an endotracheal tube in and put them on the ventilator. That way we can provide non-invasive ventilation. I think one of the other big changes, but it's also been very demanding for the system, is what's called proning patients. So by flipping a patient onto their front, seems to improve outcomes, but that is quite a difficult thing to do for a patient in intensive care. You know, you've got to keep the patient comfortable, you've got to protect them, you've got to make sure their lines don't fall out, that their airway is appropriately managed. So there are these new strategies, and remembering that if we throw out all the junk like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, dare I say, but if we look at the drugs that have been proven to work, and probably one of the good examples is dexamethasone. So a randomized trial show that dexamethasone improves outcomes. So we do have some drug strategies. We have others that are coming in as well. But if we look particularly in Australia, it's probably the combination of vaccination, management of the patients themselves, and to a certain degree, drug therapy, but also being aware of you know, the assorted complications associated with the condition.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Pleasure.
Professor David Storey, the Chair of Anaesthesia and Head of the Department of Critical Care at the University of Melbourne. This is Drive.